Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Book review with Pimelo Modene.
On the street.
On the air.
One page at a time.
One page at a time. Govan Whittle standing in for Pamela Matene on Point of View on Kaya 959. Thank you for having me. I relish the opportunity to do this segment, the book review. That's because I'm an avid reader. I'm always reading, and I really love historical books, books about spies. But luckily, you don't have to listen to my books all the time. We have Karabo Kholeng joining us. Karabo, welcome to Point of View. Thank you once again for your time.
Good evening, Govan, and good evening to everyone who's listening.
Right, let's get into it, Karabo. You kick us off. I understand that you have different types of books tonight. What's your first one?
Well, yeah, I like to cast my net as wide as possible when I do get the opportunity. The positive thing about a growing literary scene in South Africa is that we're becoming more and more spoiled for choice. The only thing that niggles at me is that we don't have enough airtime to discuss all the wonderful books that are coming out. But I mean, I suppose that's the only challenge with it's a knife-to-knife problem to have. As a growing literary scene that struggles with funding and getting as many voices as possible to get their place in the sun. So I'm going to start with this one that I've been very excited about. It's just come out literally, I think about a week or two ago. It's by a former diplomat herself, Mpobo Shego, and it's called Diplomatic Ties. It's a novel about a young woman who emerges out of Mamelodi, gets a degree at Tufts, and becomes a diplomat. However, part of her journey is also about dealing with life and what comes with the shenanigans that comes in such offices. And she gets herself embroiled in a little bit of an affair that results in her having an ice cream posting, which is diplomatic speak for getting a posting in a nice country. And she gets one to Brussels. But her shenanigans follow her there. And she can run, but she can't hide. And she has to find allies in a murky world where you're not sure whether someone's on your side, whether they really mean it or not. So what I found entertaining about this book, first of all, I'm starting to have an hypothesis, Govan, that among the diplomats of the world, some of the best novels have come out.
Yes,
Dika Swarup was South Africa's consul, India's consul general to South Africa, while he wrote the book that became Slumdog Millionaire, that ended up winning all those awards. You know, and I found that another one, Ntate Barry Gilder, he's written three novels that are telling the truth about, but it's fiction, about South Africa.
Oh,
but
you're talking about The List. And The List is one of the best historical fiction novels I've ever read. And I'd recommend it to anyone.
It's part of a trilogy. It's part of a trilogy. So the book just gets murkier. Like, the story just gets more and more intense. So I'm starting to find a very interesting link between diplomats and some of how they explore creatively some of the challenges that they face while we sleep at night. I'm not sure if we sleep at night anymore, South Africans, considering what's going on. I think diplomats have got an interesting way of looking at how they the personal impact on some of the decisions that they make, and not just for South Africa, but even for them as decision makers. Yeah,
and I think like books about diplomats and diplomacy are often really close to books about the intelligence secrets of the world, right?
I mean, like,
I got Lives on the Line by David Africa, also a new book, but I've managed to speed through it. I don't know if you know it. It's about the successful effort to undermine PAGHAT, the people against gangsterism and drugs. And the reason I thought this was interesting was because David Africa, obviously an intelligence agent for South Africa, he was integral, along with Chris Martin, in undermining the PAGHAT in the Western Cape. Remember, they burnt Rashid Stachy and those other gangsters, and their leader eventually ended up in jail. The book tells the story of the rise of PAGHAT, the infiltration of PAGHAT, and how they managed to undo the organization and eventually, well, I suppose, send them into hibernation. I mention it because PAGHAT is back. They're very active on the Cape Flats, and I think this book is instructive for anyone living in the Western Cape, well, or if you're interested in that kind of scene. You know, I know that books about the Cape Flats, the gangsters, and the intelligence work that goes into undermining them is always interesting. A quote from Khalema Motlanthe on the cover: an unprecedented insider narration of intelligence work. The foreword, written by former intelligence minister Ayanda Dlodlo, David Africa himself an esteemed intelligence agent, and he was part of the Crime Intelligence Division in 95. So a comrade that had a career in Africa and the Middle East. I think that people would really enjoy that book. It also feeds into that narrative that emerges from the diplomatic ties by Mpho Boshego.
You know what would be interesting to read this with? In parallel, it came out a few years ago, but Jeremy Vieri's kind of biography around his work, working as a very highly placed, police official in the Western Cape, because he gives that kind of history and backstory as well, right? In terms of like his role, I think it would be interesting to just kind of get his eye on those years and how we read about them with this latest book by Andy.
Indeed. Let's go in a different direction. Tell us about Love in Jozi.
Okay. So Grace Kuno, as part of her master's, she engaged several researchers and participants in looking at understandings of Black middle-class life in Johannesburg and intimacy. So she had various research participants talk about their stances on, how they navigate Black middle class as an identity, but how that impacts on the decisions they make about choosing a life partner. So it first begins by kind of theorizing around what Black middle class life means in Johannesburg and looking at the whole sort of social history of South Africa and how the middle class was built and how some of the liberties and the social mobility has come to impact on the decisions that mostly women make about the kinds of life partners that they choose. So there's one contentious one where some women say that they speak about how they find that marriage actually slows down their career ambitions. And then another makes a decision that she's going to choose her marriage first and regrets it. Another one chooses a marriage. Her husband earns less than her, but they find a common ground on how they're willing to sort of build a life together outside, while contending with these social pressures around us. Yeah, so it kind of looks at the challenges that an individual faces in how our intimate lives are affected by these other kind of, social realities such as money.
Very interesting. Well, maybe I should get that book for my wife, and for me. We could read it together. It sounds like something that we should spend more time discussing as Black middle class in Johannesburg. It certainly isn't easy being around here. You know who also had a lot of money? Robert Mugabe. I know it's a weird segment, but there's a book called 2 Weeks in November, right? Written by Douglas Rogers. Douglas Rogers is actually a travel writer, but he ended up meeting some of the spooks that planned the overthrow of Mugabe. And you know where the overthrow of Mugabe was planned? By the CIOs. In Roodepoort, in Westbury, in Boksburg, at the Holiday Inn, at the Springbok Bar. It was all planned in Johannesburg. And the overthrow of Robert Mugabe was the culmination of incredible intelligence work that was conducted in South Africa, also in Harare, in Bulawayo. But what it demonstrates is how business people from Zimbabwe met in Johannesburg and planned the whole thing. Listen, I love this book. It's called 2 Weeks in November. It opens up with a quote by, Douglas Rogers doesn't really quote anyone specific, but it says, "Don't pursue big plans in November, my child. The ancestral spirits are restless, still deliberating which prayers to answer." That Douglas Rogers says is one of the well-known, sayings of Zimbabweans. And I think it's ominous, because for those 2 weeks in November, Robert Mugabe fell. And it was the work of intelligence agents in South Africa. If you like that kind of story, which brings light to events that you may have found to be murky, this is a great book for you.
I like how these books are coming up with these titles that speak about a particular moment in time, but framing it in days and months. You had the 8 days in September, I think it's right, Frank Chikane's book.
That's right. That's about the fall of troublemaking.
Yes, you've got the July one written by Jeff Wicks and Cornita Hunter.
That's right, about the riots.
Yes, it's also about a point in July, and then you have this one as well. So it's interesting how we think of a moment in history, but in terms of stretching them over a particular period of time.
Now let's talk about September and the fact that it's Heritage Day tomorrow.
Yes, it is. And a book that I'd really like to, you know, whenever I look at books around heritage, you know, you have the, as literary journalists, you face the pressure of get as much talk going around the books that just came out. And there are other books that fall through the cracks. You were discussing Alexandra. There's a book by Solam Kabela, who teaches in the urban planning at WITS. And he did a graphic narrative nonfiction work on the history of Alexandra. It's called Alexandra, A Backstory, and it came out last year. What I find interesting about his approach, again, he uses the visual to tell a story about a place in Johannesburg that is almost the unwanted child, and where the narrative sometimes, you know, overwhelms what people go through every day. And it's also his own kind of personal love story to his complicated relationship with Alexandra. So that's the one. Another one is Machilo Mutse's book called Reweaving the Soul of a Nation. So she's a traditional practitioner who's just finished her PhD in indigenous midwife methods. But she's well known as the poet who wrote that book, The Kanga and the Kangaroo Court, that got her banished for a while in South Africa. And Reweaving the Soul of the Nation is her kind of spiritual take on how do we process, spiritually process the political events that are happening around us that affect us so profoundly in personal and spiritual ways. So I think that's a nice book to revisit. She wrote it during like the hard lockdown. And it's an interesting, you know, reflection on how we dealt with that moment and how we're coping with this moment that we're in now, whether you're spiritual or not. I just think it'll be interesting to have a take on a woman who has such insight into the history of South Africa and still carries on doing really important work.
Mm. Speaking about spiritual women for Heritage Day tomorrow, I've brought the book, which is, well, I don't know how I feel about it. It's called In Search of Nongawuse by Triem Nicholas. Now, look, it's not easy to read a book about the Eastern Cape history that's written by a European. I'm from Gonde, you know, and I grew up with visiting the memorial site for the great cattle killing of 1856. If you don't know, Nongawuse's prophecy said that the Xhosas would kill their cattle, burn their maize, and the ancestors would rise from the sea, help defeat the British who had occupied the Cape, the Eastern Cape more particularly, and by then had fought five wars of dispossession against Amakosa. And then they would be driven back into the sea. And between 1856 and 1857, the Xhosa people of the Eastern Cape killed the cattle. In fact, they killed 400,000 cattle and 40,000 people died. And Nongawuse has often been seen as the person to blame. But what Triev does, firstly, what he does, which is a bit irritating, is grapple with the pronunciation of Nongawuse and then go on the usual thing of exploring the Eastern Cape. But eventually, he gets to the point of going to Nongawuse's grave and discussing the role of players such as Sir Harry Smith in defending towns of Salem against Chief Makoma and questioning whether or not Governor Grey of the Eastern Colony was behind the visits from the ancestors which prompted this vision that Nongawuse had. And he questions the role of a number of people, key players. You know that King Hintsa had died and Chief Sahili succeeded him and was a proponent of the great cattle killing. It looks at the believers, the unbelievers. It raises a lot of questions, and I didn't expect to be grappling with this so much. Just because I'm from Gqeberha, it feels personal, and I know that there's a lot of mixed opinions about it. But it Triev Nicholas asks us to re-look at Nongawuse and how we remember her in South African society. And perhaps tomorrow, I mean, you guys could have a conversation with your relatives or with your friends about the great cattle killing and let it ruminate. What did the famine of the Xhosa people in 1957 really cause? You know, who was to blame for it? I think it's an important part of the history that we don't talk about often.
I mean, Zeks Mdab famously wrote The Heart of Redness, which was inspired by that whole saga, right? And what's really interesting about the way that contemporary historians are looking back on history is that sometimes the villain is not as villainous as they made out to be. Mm. And what I find interesting with young women like Nongawuse, and this is a very interesting link with coloniality and the obsession with pubescent girls, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at books like The Crucible, for example, and a lot of stories that still capture the popular imagination from a post-colonial perspective, when young girls reach womanhood, they become hysterical, or they're accused of being possessed by certain spirits. And there seems to be this eerily, you know, interesting theme in terms of that story. You know, young women like Joan of Arc, who was a teenager herself, who had these visions. And these stories tend to replicate themselves in imaginations of different societies whenever there's a really huge political moment. There seems to be the scapegoating of a young impressionable girl to say, either, you know, she was led by evil spirits and look, she's so young and hot that she's got to have this power over us men. Or whether this was a child who was a victim of other forces that were larger than her.
The same thing happened to Krtoa, you know, taken into the home of Jan van Riebeck as a young girl and is served as his translator, working with Oostermaal for a long time, negotiating prices for massive sheep transfers, fresh water sales by the koi to the Dutch. And then when she reached puberty and started coming into her own as a woman who not only had business interests, but was seen as a leader of the Khoi clan, the Ku clan that was on the Cape Peninsula at that time, suddenly she becomes hysterical, thought of as a drunkard, first of all kicked out of the Van Riebeck home. And I think that another great way to perhaps end the conversation on heritage is a book, funny enough you mentioned him earlier, by Jeremy Viery called Crimson Sands. This is historical fiction. It's about Dirk Aruseb and Jacob Marengo of the Bondelswarts. So these were Khoi Nama people. Well, they call them Basters, you know. It's a mixture of the settlers plus the indigenous people who were roaming between, say, Pela and Swakopmund, so on the border of the Northern Cape in Namibia, who were fighting the German army, you know, successfully so. They call themselves the Bondelswarts. And in this book, Dirk Aruseb, it's a book of becoming of a man. Dirk Aruseb undergoes the different traditional rites afforded to Khoi men, to indigenous men, the eating of the gallbladder of the eland, you know, taming the butcher bird within you. But funny enough, the person who gets him there is a woman called Nana Kraper. And Jeremy Viery explores the role, the maternal role of women in indigenous culture, and the power that they held. And though you may think that the protagonist is Dirk, but the hero of the piece is Nana Kraper. Flaws and all, she's the person that shepherds Dirk Aruseb towards manhood and towards understanding what it means to be a man. Well, then it was the early 1900s. So just as that Boer War was coming to an end, the first Anglo-Boer War, they call it the South African War now. But that, for me, I thought those two books are interesting because of Eastern Cape heritage, where I'm from, but also because of indigenous heritage, which makes up a part of me as well. And that's my contribution towards Heritage Day.
Well, that's fascinating, Govan, and thank you for sharing those with us. Wow.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you also for sharing your books. You've certainly put a few on my reading list, stuff that I'll definitely have to get to.
All right, great. Well, it was a great conversation and have a wonderful Heritage Day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Karabo Kholeng, book reviewer and journalist, joining us on Point of View to discuss a number of books. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that. This is actually my favorite feature on Point of View. I do enjoy speaking about or speaking to organizations that are making an impact as well. And just to let you know, following on from yesterday's conversation, I did have a chat to Junior Achiever South Africa. I've given them my number. Don't be surprised if you see me becoming a mentor there. But I'd like to thank everyone who's tuned in tonight. I hope you enjoyed the book feature. I hope you enjoyed some of the conversations about local government and the Matlanga Commission. And of course, don't forget to share your thoughts about our soldiers. You know, they're going through a lot at the moment. Let's keep that conversation alive. Thank you for your voice notes. Thank you, Ntate Selby from Orange Farm, for calling in. Really a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you also to everyone who helped put the show together. From myself, Govan Whittles, it's been a pleasure standing in for Pamela Motene. Good night and have a great evening.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.